we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the October 26th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Let's get ready to rumble. On Saturday, we have the rumble in Riyadh between WBC heavyweight champion Tyson Fury and the Cameroonian Francis Ngannou. And on Monday, October 30th, we mark the 49th anniversary of the Rumble in the Jungle, the epic heavyweight fight between George Foreman and Muhammad Ali in Kinshasa. I've prepared packages on both Rumbles. Yes, you might say I'm going to rumble my way through them. The 37-year-old Ngannou is a former mixed martial arts champion. Now, this non-title bout in Saudi Arabia will be his first professional boxing match. To try and gain insights and some boxing seasoning, Ngannou says he was eager to bring in former heavyweight champion Mike Tyson as his trainer.
At this point, I'm aware of my lack of experience in boxing, so he was very important to take any advice or any knowledge that I will need in order to win this fight. And we all know that Mike Tyson is someone that we don't have to introduce him anymore in the boxing world. He's the man, basically. The profile was the perfect one. He's the guy that always fight people that are taller than him, just as I'm going to do in this fight.
Francis, how are you feeling ahead of your boxing debut?
Well, I'm very excited. I'm very grateful for the opportunity and very glad because, as I said again, the organization, the welcome and everything been very warming. You know, the care that they've been taking of me and my family, the attention and everything, it's been quite great. So I'm very happy about that.
Meanwhile, Tyson Fury was named after Mike Tyson. And he says while Mike Tyson will be working Ngannou's corner, there are no hard feelings.
I think it's just business, strictly business, and that's all it will ever be. Me and Mike are still cool. You know, I'm still named after him, and he's still going to be supporting me, no matter what he says. He wants a GK to win, Tyson to win.
Gypsy King, how are you feeling ahead of Saturday night?
I feel absolutely fantastic. Cannot wait to put on a show on Saturday night. This is unbelievable. What a turnout. Fantastic. TVs, massive TVs everywhere. And what a show. Only show in town. Tune in.
49 years ago, boxing fans tuned in for another rumble. The Rumble in the Jungle in Kinshasa in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Muhammad Ali upset the then undefeated and heavily favored George Foreman with an 8th round knockout. The late, great Hall of Fame boxing trainer Angelo Dundee was working Ali's corner in Kinshasa. I asked Angelo for his memories of the Rumble in the Jungle.
Such an event. You know, you get there and we're the good guys, you know, right there, Ali Boumaye. And he was like a hero there. And everybody I met there was so congenial and nice. And the fun part of it was a guy named Chimpupu Chimpupu Wa Chimpupa. He was the PR guy. And he'd make us go. See, we were outside of Kinshasa. We were like 45 minutes away in the government complex called Nacelle. And we used to look forward to going to the gym every day.
Angelo, did Foreman train close to Muhammad?
He trained right across the way from us. And we used to spy on him. I used to borrow Howard Bingham's telescopic lens and watch him from behind the hiding spots. We're like little kids, you know, because you don't see nothing in the gym. There's nothing to check, you know, but we had fun. So this is the whole key, you know. People don't realize to excel at what you do, you got to have fun with it. And we always had fun with Muhammad every day, 19 years, I had fun, you know, so what the hell? This is what it's all about.
Angelo, was the weather a factor in the Rumble in the Jungle? I'm talking about the heat. in Kinshasa.
You got to remember, we trained in Florida, Miami. Muhammad loves the heat. In fact, to this day, Muhammad calls me, he threatens me, he's going to come down and sweat.
Angelo, did the heat bother Foreman more than Muhammad?
Well, no. I just think it was meant to be, you know, this is what happens in boxing. Isn't that a horrible career to have, you know, if somebody out there can lick you? Isn't that tough? I mean, you're a great fighter, and there's somebody out there might do a number on you.
Angelo, in terms of numbers, where do you rank the Rumble in the Jungle among Muhammad Ali's greatest fights?
Well, it's got to be one of the greatest happenings, the name changing of a name, government. Well, Muhammad, you know, it was a happening any place we ever went. You know, I get letters 10 a week maybe, you know, letting us want pictures and stuff like that. It's remarkable, you know, because here I was with a guy who was a living legend. And in his career now, I'm his fistic voice because the guy can't talk. And I know it breaks his heart. He loved to talk. He loved it because he loved talking to the media. He enjoyed that. And I pride myself with that. I pushed him towards that because if you want to be a superstar, these guys will make you a superstar. And, you know, that's why he was so great with the media. He was the first superstar that did that. Never happened before.
That's the late Hall of Fame boxing trainer Angelo Dundee, who died in 2012 at the age of 90. With more on the Rumble in the Jungle, here's my former VOA colleague, Ted Lanfair.
1974, fans in Zaire had followed his every move surrounding what came to be called the Rumble in the Jungle with George Foreman.
Even today, I meet people and they bring up the Ali fight, and they still think the fight is going on. They need to be on my side or Ali. They don't know the fight. It doesn't exist anymore, but you learn great lessons from those defeats. You learn that it's just a day in your life. It shouldn't be taken over. It shouldn't consume you. And it's just a moment, and enjoy every moment.
Boumaye, the crowd shouted. Kill him, Ali. Brutal words for perhaps the world's most famous pacifist. Muhammad Ali won 56 of 61 professional fights. In his last two bouts in 1980 and 1981, he was already showing the debilitating effects of Parkinson's disease, the brain disorder that affects muscle control.
That's my former VOA colleague, Ted Lanfair. Muhammad Ali died in 2016 at the age of 74. His epic fight against George Foreman in 1974 is also remembered in music. Several songs were written and released about the big bout in Africa. The late American singer Don Covey released this one soon after the fight, titled, appropriately enough, Rumble in the Jungle.
Ladies and gentlemen, in this corner, the challenger, wearing burgundy and white trunks from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, the former heavyweight champion.
machine, yeah. First she lived with a lick, and then it do a right. And it put poor George asleep for the night. If you see Ali in the jungle fighting the grizzly bear,
that's the late American singer Don Covey with his song Rumble in the Jungle. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Defending champion South Africa will play arch rival New Zealand in a blockbuster Rugby World Cup final on Saturday at the Stade de France near Paris. It brings together the two most successful teams in the competition. Each is bidding for a record fourth world title. Saturday's clash is a rematch of the epic 1995 final, which South Africa won in extra time 15-12 at Ellis Park in Johannesburg. Myron Nyka has this preview for us from Durban, South Africa. Sporty greetings, Myron.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. For over a century, these two great rugby nations have competed against each other, building immense tradition. Saturday's clash in Paris has the makings of an epic battle. As they round up their preparations for the match, both teams have been vocal about their respect for each other, further endearing them to neutrals around the world. All Blacks assistant coach Jason Ryan and Springbok fullback Willy Leroux shared their thoughts about the history of their rivalry.
It's been a massive tradition. It's awesome, you know. And they bring a special part of their game that, you know, I think makes it just a great rivalry. And to be doing it in a World Cup final was just, you know, that's when you want to be playing. That's when you want to be coaching. It's all you want to do is set yourself up for a gold medal. So we're looking forward to that, and the history is going to be pretty special.
Yeah, there's always respect. I think the rivalry goes back a long time, and the games that's been played against each other is always, it's hard fought, and then after the game you can see the guys, they gave it all. So there's definitely a lot of respect between Springboks and the All Blacks.
The Boks have a golden opportunity to defend their title. Leroux, who was part of the team that lifted the William Webb Ellis Cup in Japan 4 years ago, says their success is testament to the hard work put in by everyone involved in Springbok rugby.
Yeah, we've been through a lot of tough games, a few games that has tested us. But as a strong squad, not only the 23 that's playing, but the other 10 guys that's training against you, giving you pictures the whole week. And then the staff and everyone else that no one else even sees, how everyone in just squad just buys in to the same plan and for that same goal. Yeah, that's quite special.
It's been a busy 6 weeks for both teams, with one last mountain to climb. How have both teams prepared for the gold medal match? Unsurprisingly, South Africa's Quagga Smit says they've opted to stick to their processes.
No, I think the coaching staff of the Springboks try to keep everything the same. We've got a main program that we follow, and not to make some games bigger and some games smaller, because that's where you fall short. If you sometimes play against lesser of a good team and you think, yeah, it's going to be an easy week, and then, yeah. So we try to keep everything the same. Obviously, there's a bit more pressure this week, but we try to focus to our process and train the same as what we did.
It's a sentiment that All Blacks flanker Dalton Papali'i says is true for his team as well.
They keep harping on about sticking to the process, sticking to, you know, the plan that's got us to where we are now. You know, week by week, just focusing on that and not overthinking it too much, because, you know, the process is what has got us here.
There's a level of expectancy on the Springbok team. By 9 p.m. local time on Saturday, expect the country to come to a standstill as fans clamour around their television sets, bars and public viewing areas.
I think we all know what it means for South Africa. I think all of our friends and are supporting us, and they're just so excited for this weekend. People are making plans to get together, to watch the games together. So, yeah, we know they stand behind us, and we have to put up a good performance for all of them also.
New Zealand, meanwhile, despite their great history in the competition, were not given much of a chance by pundits given their poor form heading into the competition. Papali'i says they did not allow criticism in the press to affect their plans.
I think the boys are in a pretty good spot. You know, like I said in their comment, you know, this is the moment on top of the mountain that everyone chases. You know, every kid, you know, growing up, you know, you sort of have that thought, oh man, you know, one day I'd love to be there. But to make it a reality and to go through all the hard yards, you know, getting to this game, it's making out it's going to be a big one. And this is the game that we got to leave it all out there. So looking forward to it.
The iconic All Blacks haka will set the tone for this bruising encounter. Both teams stand on the precipice of history. One team will become the first nation in World Cup history to hold four titles. For the Sunny Side of Sport, I'm Myron Naika in Durban, South Africa.
Thanks, Myron. In European club football, Cameroonian goalkeeper Andre Onana was one of the African heroes in the third round of matches in the UEFA Champions League. Onana saved a last-minute penalty kick to ensure Manchester United won its first Champions League game this season. For a look at Onana's performance and other highlights, Iron Mike Mbonye spoke with the chief football writer at ACLSports.com. Fisayo Dairo.
As usual, there was quite enough excitement to go around in this week's version of the UEFA Champions League group stage games, especially on Wednesday night, where we had as much as 28 goals scored in just 8 matches. Now, football being a game of scoring goals, you can imagine having at least 4 goals in most venues on Wednesday night. What the fans could have enjoyed. It was premium entertainment. The players, they give good account of themselves, and the clubs are now trying to put themselves in the reckoning and in the conversation for qualifying for the next round. 3 matches have already been played. We are halfway stage in the group stage, and it's interesting to know that out of all the clubs in the group stage, only 3 clubs are yet to muster a point after 3 group matches. And these clubs are Union Berlin in Group C, the German side playing in the Champions League for the first time in decades. And also Benfica of Portugal. I'm quite surprised by that. In Group D, they're without a point. And in Group H, Royal Antwerp of Belgium are also without a point. All other teams in this year's competition have had at least 1 point on the desk. So this just goes to show that the teams are really, really giving their all. They don't want to be there and make up the numbers. They want to give their fans something to cheer about.
In the UEFA Champions League round of 3 games, did African players contribute to the success recorded by their teams?
The highlight of Tuesday's action in the UEFA Champions League was the performance of Cameroonian goalkeeper Andre Onana for Manchester United. the former Inter Milan stopper, inspired his side Manchester United to their first points of the campaign. United had gone winless in their first two matches, and after another poor performance at home, they seem to be running away with a 1-0 win, but the team from Denmark, FC Copenhagen, Onana was at the right place at the right time to deny the spot kick. And it was simply the highlight of the night. That will surely gladden the hearts of many Africans, and most especially Cameroonians, as we inch closer to the 2023 Africa Cup of Nations coming up in January 2024. Two other Africans saw the back of the net, although they ended up on the losing side. First, Nigerian midfielder Alassane Youssouf opened the scoring in the game between Royal Antwerp and FC Porto, but the former champions Porto came back from behind to win that, opening 4-1. The other African that scored was Meshack Elia, the DR Congo centre forward that's one of the products of the African Nations Championship, the best player of the tournament in 2016. He equalised for his side, Young Boys of Switzerland, when they faced Manchester City, the reigning champions. But City scored 2 more goals, including a brace for Erling Haaland to ensure they sealed that game 3-1.
Fisayo, do you think that the big teams have started showing dominance after the round of 3 games? Any upsets so far?
Having reached the halfway stage of this season's UEFA Champions League group stage, I think it is expected that the men should gradually be separating themselves from the boys. Who are the men? They are the ones I refer to as the pre-tournament favourites. Before the group stage kicked off, there were some clubs that are expected to move the farthest among the teams. And who else but the likes of the defending champions Manchester City, who are one of at least 3 teams to have amassed a total number of 9 points out of a possible 9. Manchester City have been impregnable in Group G, where they've won all their 3 group games, and so also FC Barcelona, who have 9 points also from Group H. In Group A, Bayern Munich also have 9 points out of 9, and for these are established Champions League landlords, if you ask me. And same also is Real Madrid, the record winners of the UEFA Champions League, who have 9 points from the 3 group games in Group C. Yeah, some have also not done badly, likes of the beating finalists last year, FC Internazionale di Milano of Italy, who have 7 points and are joint top in Group D alongside Real Sociedad of Spain. So these are some of the top guns, of course, doing their utmost to ensure that they get to the next round of the competition. Bet on in this particular round, there are not much upsets, especially on Wednesday, because every team that won on Wednesday were expected to do the business, and they did just that.
That's Fisayo Dairo, the chief football writer at ACLSports.com. And Fisayo spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Port Harcourt, Nigeria.
Sporty greetings. This is Fisayo Dairo, chief football writer at ACLSports.com, and you are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossings, where we feature music and interviews along with your favorite artists from around the world. Tune in and interact live with us here in Washington, D.C.
Hello, Shirin.
Hello, Larry. How are you?
Good. How are you tonight?
Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT.
Around the clock, the Voice of America keeps you in touch with the latest news.
Tune in at the top of every hour, every day of the week.
For the 5-minute VOA newscast.
We bring you reports from our correspondents and interviews with newsmakers from around the globe.
Give us 5 minutes and we'll give you the world.
VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
pro basketball, a Texas showdown. The Dallas Mavericks spoiled the NBA debut of French phenom Victor Wembanyama of the San Antonio Spurs. The AP's Roy Flores reports from San Antonio, Texas.
Victor Wembanyama made his highly anticipated debut and showed flashes of brilliance, but Luka Doncic stole the spotlight with a triple-double to lift the Dallas Mavericks to a 126-119 victory over the San Antonio Spurs Wednesday night. Wembanyama, the first overall pick in the NBA draft, found himself in foul trouble in the first half and struggled to get into any rhythm, finishing with 15 points and 5 rebounds.
I felt surreal for a moment. I just feel very lucky to be here. Doesn't change anything for me. Of course, I want to give the best show to the fans, but it's still my job. I still got responsibilities.
Dallas closed out the game on an 8-0 run. Doncic had 33 points, 13 rebounds, and 10 assists. Roy Flores, San Antonio.
Thanks, Roy. From San Antonio, let's go to New York City, where Latvian big man Kristaps Porzingis made a strong debut with the Boston Celtics. The AP's Tom Merriam reports from New York.
The Celtics won a feisty opening night game from their longtime rivals, the Knicks, 108-104. New York had a 6-point lead with 3.5 minutes remaining, but Boston went on a 13-3 run to post the win. Kristaps Porzingis, in his first Celtics game, scored the first 7 points of that run.
We were able to finish out the game on making some big plays and some free throws and overall fun game to play.
Porzingis finished with 30 points and 8 rebounds. Jason Tatum scored 34 with 11 boards. The Knicks were led by R.J. Barrett and Emmanuel Quigley, who each netted 24 points. Tom Merriam, New York.
Thanks, Tom. From New York, let's go to the southern U.S. city of Memphis, Tennessee. That's where the New Orleans Pelicans defeated the host Memphis Grizzlies, as we hear now from the AP's Dave Ferry.
C.J. McCollum and Zion Williamson led the Pelicans past the Grizzlies, 111-104 in Memphis. McCollum scored 24 points on 8 of 16 from the field, including 6 of 11 from three-point range. Williamson delivered 12 of his 23 points in the fourth quarter and finished with 7 rebounds.
I think it's going to be a few games, just getting that in-game flow back. No matter how much I work out, train, play pickup, it's nothing like a real NBA game.
Brandon Ingram dropped in 19 points for New Orleans, and Jonas Valanciunas added 12 with 12 boards. Desmond Bane led Memphis with 31 points.
First half, our transition defense struggled a little bit. We tightened it up, but we gave up way too many second chance points. And, you know, teams are going to make shots, and, you know, we'll make shots and we'll miss shots. But, you know, staying positive and keeping our swag is Grizzly basketball, and we didn't have that for 48 minutes tonight.
I'm Dave Ferry.
Thanks, Dave. Finally, let's give a sunny side of sports salute to Brooklyn Nets guard Cam Thomas, who scored 36 points in a 114-113 loss to the visiting Cleveland Cavaliers. Cam set an NBA record for most points scored by a reserve player in a season opener. Talk to us, Cam.
I feel like we had a lot of good looks on offense, but really the defense was good. They just hit a lot of tough shots. You know, you just got to live with it, especially with how we're defending. You just got to live with those shots that they made. But, you know, it's a lot of good things to build off of, honestly.
And that wraps up the October 26th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in.
I get it.
I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.